Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good morning, Rochester. You are listening to the Soundbites, and yes, Nick is going to take a needed day off. We all three of us, you know, from time to time, just have to kick back and enjoy the family, and that's what he's doing. Well deserved. So, Steve and I said, no problem. We'll handle it. I think we can. So I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And you are listening to Soundbites. And I want to remind you folks, we're here to take your computer questions. So if you got a question, please give us a call. 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And if we can, we will have the text line open here in a few minutes. I just got to set stuff up, but we don't have any news.
Yeah, I'm bringing up the Google Doc to see if there was things we haven't covered.
Well, one thing,
sometimes don't get to everything,
and this is not computer related, but this is radio related. Don Imus,
yep,
one of the famous shock jocks of radio, because I'm sure you folks listen to a variety of radio, has passed, and he is only 78 or 79 years old. 78. And, I mean, him and I think it was Howard Stern there for the longest time.
Yeah, they were, you know, deadly rivals.
Oh, you're going back and forth, back and forth. But I think he was, even when I first looked at him, he looked old then.
Yeah.
He lived a very, let's put it this way, rough life or good life.
Yep.
Hopefully. And he was a very entertaining gentleman. He was a very entertaining gentleman, and had fun listening to him and everything else. So with that, we also
there was another death this week, Chuck Peddle. A lot of people may not know that name, but he designed and created the 6502. Pretty much he's been called the father of the personal computer. That was the chip that powered the Apple II, the Commodore PET. The Apple I before that, even, pretty much created the computer revolution with this IC that did so much that it allowed personal computers to be created.
Yep.
He died at 82.
Wow. Going out there quick.
Yep.
One of the other things I'd love to encourage some of the folks, like to hear what you guys got as maybe toys, trinkets, or anything else for Christmas. And see what type of gadgets you're trying to set up, and maybe if you're having issues and that type of stuff, give us a call, 966-5299. I'm going to throw one up. I wound up getting green light, and I'm enjoying it. I won't deny it. And the speed is fantastic. But I'm having one issue, and I'd like to know if any of the listeners out there that have green light have run into the same thing, and that's what we call port forwarding. I'm trying to open up some ports, and I'm having some issues. So if you guys are out there and have had any issues with port forwarding and that type of stuff, I'd love to hear from you folks. But, again, it was the whole season where computers, you know, were kind of taking the back seat. I mean, tablets and the phones and that type of stuff seemed to be the big thing this year. Not like in years past, and if you folks have been listening to us for a long time, you know, we were always talking about, oh, you had to get this 486 or this next version of the chip because AMD and Intel were always trying to compete by the Christmas season, you know, for the latest and fastest chip that you just had to have, and, oh, of course, it's going to require more memory and all that other stuff. Well, granted, just like Microsoft. They're running into a lull. I mean, they're still making chips, but the demand is more geared towards now the tablets and the phones.
Yeah, the concept of what a computer is these days is changing.
Yeah.
And some people have called it the post-PC era. that phones and tablets, which are in many cases more powerful than computers of a few years ago, are computing devices of norm now. Hold them in your hand and carry them with you all the time.
And let's face it, just on your own cell phone, the cameras in those, I mean, they're unbelievable. They're better than, you know, 10, 15 years ago, if you had a regular, you know, Kodak camera or whatever, that you go around and take family pictures and all that.
Yep.
Heck, the camera now on your phone is easily 10 times better.
Yeah. The camera phones pretty much killed the casual point-and-shoot camera market.
And the other thing that it did away with is a lot of the, well, people still do it, but not as much. Remember those kiosks that you used to have and you'd go drop your film off?
Yep.
And, you know, either the next day or same day service or next day service, yeah. And you paid a premium.
1 hour instant, you know, film.
No, you literally go into, say, one of the drugstores or one of the stores, sit there with your flash drive, and you can pick and choose the size of, you know, you can do your own editing.
You had to pay for the film, and it was 24 pictures on a roll.
Yep.
Then you had to pay for developing and printing. So you were really careful about the pictures you took. And out of those 24 pictures, you might have got one really good one.
Yeah, and, you know, not overexposed or anything else. Or somebody wasn't, you know, which happens a lot with families. And I know you folks know what I'm talking about, is when you go to sit there and try to take a family photo, and somebody's standing there with their eyes closed.
Yep.
Or looking the other way, and it's like, oh, shoot. So you'd had to take another one. Well, now with your camera, you know, your phone, you can sit there, click, 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 you know, get a bunch of them.
Yeah, and you've got 1,000 pictures, 2,000 pictures on your SD card, and there's still only one really good one.
But how folks have easily forgotten, you know, those days. And what it did, and now you just expect, oh, yeah, I just put it on my phone, and, oh, you want that picture? Boom. Quick, send it to somebody.
Yep.
I mean, just having that capability is unbelievable. But, you know, if you folks have got an experience of that type of stuff, we'd love to hear from you. We got the phones open. Like I said, Nick won't be with us this week. He will return next.
He's listening.
Oh, is he listening?
Yep. He just pointed me to a news link. From his site.
Well, if he's sit there listening, I'd love to hear if he has done any port forwarding.
Well, people in the chat room are saying it's all in your router, and yeah, Dave knows that, but he set it up in the Orbi router, but it's not working.
Yeah,
here's, so we were wondering if maybe the Greenlight router was blocking that.
Yeah, let me explain this, folks. I've done port forwarding.
And
to
Nick's in the YouTube chat, too.
You know, I've
watching
done...
from his phone, because he has no internet where he is.
I have done plenty of port forwarding. Matter of fact, before I switched services, my other router, no problem. I went in and put it in, and it works. And the Orbi is, I got to admit, when Nick pointed me to, you know, get a new router so I could do the faster speed, the Orbi is one of them. And they're not paying me to do any of this stuff, but the Orbi was very easy to set up, and I even had a satellite. Plug-in satellite that I put upstairs, and you just hit the button on the back. This is how easy to hit the button on the side that says sync. And I found it.
Yep. A lot of people don't realize their Wi-Fi router can now be the bottleneck. You get super fast, you know, fiber internet, and you're still running your 10-year-old router that can do, you know, 50 megabit, which is used to be more than enough for the 10 megabit internet. But now when our internet is 100, 200, 300, those old routers don't work very well anymore. You often need a new router, too.
Yeah, so that's what I wound up doing. You know, I had to get a new switch, so I got the router, because my old switch, that was lucky if it did 100, and it was quite old. It was from when I first started the business over, you know, 30 years ago. So I wound up getting a new Netgear switch box. Works great, you know, do up to a gig. And then I wound up getting the Orbi. And the Orbi, like I say, was very easy to set up. If you folks don't know much about networking and all that.
Yeah, it's part of the new mesh system. A lot of the mesh networks are much easier to set up than the older access points were.
This is very user-friendly, folks. And like I say, just plugged it in. And I really didn't have to do much. Because right on the front of the router was the wireless name and the password. And they just give you the instructions how to get to it. There it was on the page. I logged in.
And most of the time, the setup process makes you change the password.
Yeah.
That's been the biggest problem with routers is they come with a default password, so anyone driving by your house can get into your network.
Well, the Orbeez all come with their own preset. They change them.
Yep.
So that was great. So, I got that all set up. It was very easy. One of the other things I will say is, of course, I'm using a couple older my wife's old laptop upstairs, and the network card in that one, you know, the wireless. It's an old machine. I'll admit it's the laptop's got to be 10 years old, but it runs this one program that I needed to run, and it runs it great. But it also connects to the internet, to this other machine in my network. And it's kind of slow because, you know, it's all wireless over in that part of the house.
Yep.
So that's why I put the Orb satellite up there. And, you know, great connection. But the upload and download speeds, I was only getting maybe, I want to say, between 60 and 70 on the download, which isn't bad. Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know, hey, I got green light now. That's a lot faster internet. So I found this one device, and this was one of my Christmas gifts. It's you know, like on the old wireless cards, how they had the little antennas?
Yeah.
They now have USB ones that'll do up to 1,200.
Yep, and you need the extra antenna. A lot of the wireless devices now don't have antennas anymore, or they're internal antennas, because people don't like the antenna sticking up. But you as a ham guy know, the bigger your antenna, the better your signal.
So, yeah, this little device, I paid all of $19.95 for it on Amazon. And it's got two little antennas, just like the old wireless network cards, with a USB. You plug it in, you put this little disc in, and it sets this little wireless network card USB up. And then it puts an icon for Realtek on your desktop. You hit the button, and it, again, automatically sets up the wireless. So all of a sudden now that I was only getting, say, 60 to 70 megabit, now has jumped up to 180.
Yep.
Just improving the wireless card.
Right, because most of the wireless, the older wireless, people still using wireless N, that was 450 max.
Yeah.
And the early wireless AC, which they've renamed to wireless 5 now, and that was 1300, 1400 as you go up higher from there. Some of the new routers can do 1800, 1900. And we're moving into wireless 6, which is the newest version, which is 802.11.ax. No one wants to know those numbers anymore, so we're calling it Wi-Fi 6. So now we have 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi, 5th-gen cellular, and Wi-Fi 6, and Wi-Fi 5, all confusing people as to what capabilities are.
Yeah, that's one thing, though, that they are really pushing right now with the holiday ads is this new 5G.
Yeah.
And they're trying to say that it'll go great distance.
If there's a 5G cellular router every couple hundred feet,
it's
capable of gigabit over cellular. If you're a couple of feet from the router,
their advertising, you know, is very deceptive. I will say,
yeah, it's true for a very small area and very very
well. Small. They're trying to tout it as though it's over great distance.
Yeah. Potentially it can be, but until they build out all the towers.
Yeah,
it won't be.
Any buildings in the way and everything else, clear line of sight.
Yeah, the millimeter wave they're talking about now is very, very short distance, but very high speed.
Yep.
So, and it gets blocked by virtually everything. So it's the longer waves that can get through everything.
Yep. All right, tell you what, let's go to the phones. We got Steve from Greece on the phone. Go ahead, Steve.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and you're what you're talking about today is what I was going to call in about.
Go ahead.
I just got my notice the green leaf is coming, green light.
Yep.
And I have a two-part question. I have a Linksys EA9300, and I don't know if I need to replace it or not. I have done all kinds of research, and they just don't seem to answer that question. And I also have a repeater, Linksys repeater, that lets me get out to the backyard. And I'm wondering if that's going to be useless.
Well, they'll still work. It's just they won't work as well as they could necessarily. You need to know what the specs are on each device.
Yeah, what is capable is max speed of cranking out of it.
Okay. So it doesn't matter if it's...
Like, say your particular route, say your switch.
So the EA9300 is an AC4000 router, so it is capable of up to 4,000 megabit, 4 gigabit signals.
You're good there.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's one of the main questions. And then if I use the repeater, I don't think the repeater is going to be anywhere near...
Yeah, it depends on the specs of what that repeater can do. And that's one of the differences in the old Wi-Fi networking that used repeaters or signal boosters. It was slower connections because it used half the frequency for a back channel and the other half for the 4-channel. So you basically cut your speed in half. With the new mesh network routers, they have their own independent communication link between each router, so it doesn't cut down on the networking speed as much. And so that can be better for longer distances and greater range, unless your repeater is also capable of the faster networks too.
Okay, so I guess if I've got the fast speed inside the house, I really don't need it in the backyard. Would the repeater work, but at a slower speed?
Yeah, it depends on what the capabilities of that repeater are.
Okay. Well, geez, guys, you just made my day.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, though.
Oh, I'm sort of excited about it. Oh.
Did it just go green?
Pardon?
Did they just say that they're, you know...
Yeah, they sent me the email. My area is we got enough people, and... I haven't come for setup yet. We haven't talked about that.
All right. Now, you did reply back, because I almost made the mistake when they're saying that they're going in and hooking up people.
Yeah, pre-order now. Make sure you do your pre-order. They only take a penny, but that gets you in the list.
And they did the penny, and then once they were setting up the network, they said, you know, email on in to get on the schedule.
Oh, I did not reply. I just thought that...
No, that's what I was thinking, too. And then it's like, oh, no. And then they wind up giving me a ticket number. And then once they were in my area to start hooking up to houses, then I got the ticket number. They came and they wound up giving them a call. And they got on the schedule to bring it on then into the house.
Ah, okay. Well, I'll make a phone call later today.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't have any problems with the green light working with my DirecTV, should I?
No, but you may. Well, you're going to be using the same Wi-Fi router, so nothing in your local network will care.
Yeah.
Your Wi-Fi router will definitely get a new address from the Greenlight Fiber router when it comes in.
Right, I can always set that up again.
Yeah.
See, that's one thing, that's what I loved, getting in the green light that I was able to, you know, cut the cord. Well, I cut the cord a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I wound up getting, a Roku stick, a Roku box, hooked that up. And now I've noticed with, because I've got the Sling service, and I wind up before, you know, if I go on my old internet, we'd go to certain channel, you know, TNT. And they'd pull it up, and then sometimes once in a while it would have to do buffering or it'd lose connections. Since I've gone to Greenlight, now if we go to a particular station, boom, it just starts playing. No buffering, nothing.
Yep.
It's just there and it plays.
And as Nick pointed out in the YouTube chat, installation fees are higher. A penny is to get you on the list.
Yeah, it's $100 for the install.
Quite often, you can get payment plans built in if you want. If you do the even faster service.
Now, say I sign up for a plan and would like to go up or down in speed. Is that easy to do?
Yeah, pretty much. I think their minimum now is 400. Is it?
What's that?
Greenlight's minimum.
500 megabits.
500 is minimum, and you can go up from there if you want.
500, 750, 1,000. You can go to their website and, like, I think.
Saw those. I just didn't. Actually, I don't know which one to pick, but.
You start out low and see if you need to. I'm telling you right now, I've got just the basic 500. It is blazing fast.
Do you have a lot of kids that are streaming a lot of different videos at the same time?
Yeah. The biggest thing that I saw, like, on my PC. You know, I go to start a file, and like Nick said, I thought something was wrong because all of a sudden there's the icon down.
There's no progress bar.
There's a download there on my desk, my desktop. It went, it gives it an initial time, say 46 seconds. Boom.
Yeah.
Then it's on the desktop.
I'm looking for that. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's definitely, you will enjoy it, my friend.
And a number of years ago, I got myself off of Roadrunner Mail. I don't have to worry about changing my email address.
That's a lot of things people don't remember. Most of the service providers now will let you keep your email address when you leave their service, but some of them don't. But we generally recommend to people not to use their ISP's email. Get a Google address or an Apple address, and so you can switch ISPs. And it's easier than changing your postal address.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when you change your email address, you have to tell lots of people. Yep. So if you change your email address and set up a new address first before you switch ISPs, then you have more time to tell everyone your new address.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's all done. A number of people I had to remind, and when they didn't respond to their emails for a month, they kind of figured out I wasn't getting it.
Yeah. Yeah, you find out who's important, who you're important to when they decide if to send you a phone call if you're not responding to their email.
Yeah. Gentlemen, thank you. You have a very good, hope you had a good Christmas and have a wonderful New Year. And I'm looking forward to listening to you 52 times next year.
There you go. Yeah. Have a great one, my friend.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, today will be our 52nd show for this year. I've been numbering them all along.
All right, tell you what. That tells me right now we got to take a slight break. We've got a couple folks on the phone. I will be getting to you folks just momentarily, so please hang on. And we will return right after these messages. You are listening to Sound Bites on Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And you are listening to Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And let's see here. There we go. And we have Bob from Henrietta on the line. Go ahead, Bob.
Oh, good afternoon. Let me take you off speaker.
Yes, please.
First off, you owe the swear jar about 40 bucks from constant mentioning green light and bragging about it. For those of us who aren't going to get it for any time soon.
Oh, hey, I wouldn't say never, since he just signed that new deal, agreement here in Rochester with
We talked about that last week. That he's going to be focused on Buffalo, not Rochester.
No,
Rochester company.
No, that company is a Rochester company only. Folks are misunderstanding. The Buffalo deal is a whole different pie. The company that he just
LaChase Construction here in Rochester.
You're right.
LaChase. There were two recent announcements.
Yeah.
They partnered with LaChase to do construction, but also Galisano dumped a ton more money in him. But he's going to be focused.
That's
on
right.
On
yeah,
Buffalo.
But that's just another way to write off more money. I mean, he sees
they can
the
do
potential.
Both at the same time.
Yeah, he sees the potential
companies.
Where the internet is going, and he's jumping on the bandwagon early.
Yeah, and
Chase is strictly here in Rochester only. He will probably get another company in Buffalo to get, because he's learning from here in Rochester on how to do it properly. And bringing on Chase is a great way to is a good way to expand it and get it out faster, because the faster he can get it out and get it set up, more people, he hears the people saying that they want faster internet. He knows that. And that's why he's trying to use Rochester right now as a model, since this is what he invested in, to get it up and get it running faster. He doesn't want to keep people waiting, and then they're going to get, oh yeah, maybe some decade, you know, long before I can do it. But he wants to.
I expect I'll be dead before I can get it.
No, I almost bet he's good. Like I say, with going with LeChase, he's going to, you know, use their resources to get it out faster and get it set up more. He's got a lot of companies that he's hired and contracted with to get it up and running. I mean,
but that wasn't the purpose of my call. I just wanted to remind you to put some money in the swear jar for bragging about it. Okay.
And no problem.
About port forwarding through their equipment.
Yeah.
Does their router provide you with a public or a NATed address?
What do you mean? I'm pretty sure it's a public address.
Yeah, it's a public address.
Because some ISP routers already do a network translation to give you a private address locally. But then you would need to have your port forwarding set up twice. But if you're getting a public address from the ISP router, then your router becomes
the only one. You shouldn't be able to forward because you're getting public right to your doorstep.
To your router, so to your personal router, then in your personal router you put forwarding to the computer you want.
If you want to screw it up with iOS or something like that, fine, have at it. But if you're coming, if you get a public being presented directly to your equipment, you should be able to forward through your own equipment as needed.
Right, but what might be happening, and I don't think it is some ISPs block port forwarding. They only allow internet ports or web ports, 80.
Some of them will block common attack ports like the ports used for remote desktop and so forth.
Right, and mail. They'll block port 25
a lot of the time.
So you can't run your own mail server. But yeah, so it's probably not that. It's probably a setting either in the router or check, verify your IP address in your Raspberry Pi.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I thought, oh, wait a minute, I might have figured it out, because in setting up the Raspberry Pi, in one of the files, you have to go in and set the My IP address. A lot of folks don't realize that in some of the cases. If you go to My IP address and click enter, it will show you what your IP address is. Not the machine.
What is your head-end device?
Hmm?
What is your head-end device? What connects directly to the output of whatever Greenlight gives you for a router?
It's an Orbi router.
Yeah, it's an Orbi router. So what happens is Greenlight comes in, and they give you this tiny little box that the fiber goes into.
Yeah, a fiber router. Fiber comes in and Ethernet comes out.
So Internet comes out of that. So that I plugged into my Orbi router. And like you say, the Orbi was super easier than to, set up. Literally, there was nothing much to set up. It just plugged in.
So is this Orbi router the device Greenlight translates the fiber optic
internet with? No, Greenlight has its own fiber router. Orbi router is his network router with Wi-Fi in it.
When you get Greenlight, you get this little Greenlight comes in, like I say, with the fiber into their little box.
Right, fiber in and Ethernet out. Like when the cable company comes in, it's coax in and Ethernet out.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, so that coax you got to plug into your router. You know, I didn't get a, Spectrum, you know, when you set up for theirs, they supply the modem if you want.
The modem and the router if you want. Yeah.
That you can supply.
Right. Or you can use your own.
Service without wireless, the router they give you translates coax to Ethernet, but what comes out of that Ethernet is your public. Is that right? What's coming out of the device?
Yes.
Yes.
Greenlight gives you?
Yeah. Yeah. So
okay,
then I plug.
Now what do you have connected directly to that? A router?
Yeah, my Orbi router. And then my Orbi router then plugs into my switch. Because I have
a number of websites out there that'll scan your computer's ports. You can easily use, actually, I think you could probably get away with using Shields Up on GRC's website.
That does public ports.
Yeah.
To see if you have a public port open, which you want to have open, so that would be a test to see if the open port,
forwarding port, it's going to come back with a response, either no response at all, black hole, open or closed.
Yep.
If he gets no response at all, if he, depending upon what he hooks up.
See, here's the thing.
If he hook up a computer that he's temporarily disabled all firewalling for, so forth.
Here's the thing. When I say what it is I'm trying, I've got it set up to use three ports on a Raspberry Pi for this one program.
I don't know what a Raspberry Pi is.
It's a computer.
It's a little computer. And basically what I'm trying to do is because we use these in ham radio, it's a program called EchoLink. And EchoLink will do voice over IP. And basically what people can do is I can pull up this program and click on it. Now, and it goes through these ports, 5200, 5998, 5198, and 99. So I go ahead and set those all up, and I can ping them. I can ping them no problem. I can ping those addresses. But for some reason, the program isn't, with the ports, connecting. If somebody tries to connect to my my little Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, so something set up wrong somewhere.
What I would suggest is either get a computer.
It is a computer.
It is a computer.
So the problem is in the computer, the router, or the firewall.
Well, better yet, the best thing would be a Linux box.
It is a Linux box.
It is a Linux. You don't
understand. Yeah. It's easy incoming connection on whatever port you're trying to check.
Yep.
That'll find out whether Greenlight's blocking it or not.
Yeah, we're pretty sure Greenlight is not blocking it. It's a setting that's wrong in the Linux box itself.
And that's what I'm trying to figure out because, you know, like I said.
Oh, so he does have a Linux box, and then he's got
The Raspberry Pi is a Linux box.
Yeah, Raspberry Pi is a Linux box.
Can you? I'm not familiar with that device.
Yeah.
Can you access it like you would a normal Linux-based computer and tell
a
firewall?
Yes, it is a normal Linux-based computer.
Yeah, it's running what they call PiStar. It's a little Linux. Raspberry Pi is a little Linux computer, and the software that I loaded onto it is what they call PiStar. And PiStar is the program that happened to be running on this Linux box. And now, when I try to get out through these ports that I need open, it's not and somebody tries to come in, they're not connecting to me. And it was working before when I was on Spectrum. And like I say, the only thing that changed was going from Greenlight over to, from Spectrum over to Greenlight. It was working fine. I was connecting to, using this software. People were able to connect to me, no problem. And it was working great. So I'm just trying to find out what hitch there.
Yeah, we'll have to come over to the house.
How big a netmask Greenlight gives you compared to Time Warner? Maybe the Linux box's firewall rules are written for. I'm just picking this out of thin air to make the discussion easy. Maybe the Time Warner was giving you a /24 or something like that. You know, a netmask for /24 address. But Greenlight's giving you something different, and the Linux box firewall can see that difference?
It's possible. It's one of these things where it's hard to answer over the phone because we have to be in front of Dave's computer. But thanks for the help.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know. I thought I had it, you know, because I thought, well, the only thing that really changed, you know, because in the Orbi, setting up port forwarding, I've done that since the cows come home. And the Orbi makes it so simple because when you open up a port, you know, you put in the address, it automatically defaults it from the internal to the external. And it even gives you a menu down below that lists all the devices. So I was able to just select the Raspberry Pi that I want it open for.
So it recognized it on the
There and it goes right to that address, and it's like, son of a gun.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks for calling. We'll figure it out, and Dave will probably report on it next week.
All right. Well, don't forget to put quarters in the jar for mentioning Greenlight.
Yeah. All right. Take care.
Have a good day.
He might owe a few for telling you so many times. You owe a few. But yeah, it's pretty interesting. While we're bringing the next caller up, where's my news story go? There was an interesting news story this week on a Chinese hacker group that are believed to be working on behalf of the Chinese government that are learning how to bypass two-factor authentication to attack government and industry targets. It's generally speaking, two-factor authentication is you log in somewhere with a username and password, and then you get a code on your two-factor device as a second thing. It turns out that this group called APT20 stole an RSA Secure ID token and are able to use it to generate valid codes in order to bypass, or not actually bypass, they're actually using that as their second factor to get in somewhere.
Yep.
And it's sending a chill through the security industry that something like this could be happening, and with government-sponsored hackers with virtually unlimited funding and unlimited talent, it's getting really scary out there.
Yep. All right, let's go back to the phones. We got Richard from Webster. Go ahead, Richard.
Hey, I'm one of those prehistoric...
Richard, wait a minute. Richard, hold on. Are you on speakerphone?
Yeah.
Please take us off.
Let me take you off.
Yes, please. Like the commercials, the ad says, there is no great speakerphone, so when you folks do call us, please take us off of speakerphone because it echoes and sounds bad.
It's hard enough putting
in
a,
our phone headphones.
It's hard enough putting a phone on a radio. A speakerphone is even worse.
So go ahead, sir.
Okay, I'm one of those prehistoric users. I still have AOL as my internet. Well, as my email. About a week ago, when I went online and I brought up Internet Explorer and I went to AOL to load my mail, I get a site that says Guse, G-U-S-E, advertising.
Yeah, that's one of the worst problems with AOL, and Yahoo is sort of a close second to them. There's so much advertising on their websites that it makes it almost impossible to use their mail. You might be better off using a mail reader and not using the AOL website. And you might want to think about replacing an AOL address with something newer. But there's nothing wrong with AOL Mail in itself. It's just often their website is just so full of ads, it's hard to get to.
If I go to, I've tried it where I went to Google Chrome, and I can bring it up that way, and it doesn't shift me over to Guse. But I wondered if there was some way I could just get Guse out of that.
You may be infected with something. I would suggest running the security tango. It looks like Guse.advertising is a known spyware that gets installed through malicious programming.
All right. That's a brand new computer. I've only had it maybe 6 weeks.
Went to a bad website. Well, actually, you may not have gone to a bad website. It was an ad on a good website that probably infected you.
Okay.
That's how the ads are passing now. We used to say, stay off the porn sites and the pirate sites, stay out of the dark alleys and you won't get mugged. But now the bad guys have found out they can put an ad on a main website. And so can go to CNN, you can go to the Democrat and Chronicle, and there'll be a malicious ad on that website because the ad networks are so easy to filter through.
All right. Well, I'll run my spyware, whatever malware.
Yep.
And see what comes up, and would that automatically remove it, or just let me know that?
Well, it depends on which one you're running. We like Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware. They will both find and remove the malware for you.
Okay. This was through. I bought my computer from Staples, and they installed whatever. There was a. A Dell computer, so I don't know if I've got a Dell product on or if it's
Dell doesn't make anti-malware programs, so you most likely have a Staples spyware program.
Okay.
They haven't been known to put in very good protection software in their computers. In fact, there was a couple of them that the researchers found were reporting back home for all of the computers purchased at like Staples and Office Max and some of the other office supply stores. So I would probably remove everything that they put in there and go through the securitytango.com website and download the ones that we recommend because we know they're good.
So SecurityTango?
Yep, securitytango.com. You can dance the tango and clean all the malware out. We have different programs for antivirus and anti-malware and anti-pop-ups and anti-rootkits. Usually starting with Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware is the first good step.
Okay. Well, appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Okay, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, too.
Same to you.
Yep.
It's, we forgot to mention, because we forgot, this is our last show of the year.
Yeah. Another year bites the dust. You know, of course, we've done 30.
Yeah. So it's coming up on the 1 o'clock hour as Dave is bringing a new phone call online, and we got a lot of nice stuff happened this year. A lot of websites are doing their best of for the year. In fact, a lot of them are doing best of the decade because we're depending on whether you start with the year zero or year one. We're either ending a decade or we have one more year left in the decade.
Yeah, well, we've already done 30 years, three yep. decades. You know, it seems funny that we've gone, you know, to when I remember when we first started, you know, the computers were just starting to come out in the boxes, the old 286s.
Yep.
You know, the big boxes, the IBM. We got them at Kodak.
Yep.
And I remember our first computer that I ever dealt with and played around with, and a friend of mine and I sat there in BASIC. It was a big analyzing computer, but we could take it offline, and we put in it was an old trash 80, and we put in the old 8-inch floppy disk,
yep.
and we had this program in there for doing farming and that type of stuff, whether you were going to, you know.
We had one called Kingdom, mm-hmm. where you had a text-based adventure where you had to plant enough crops to sell for gold. But then if the weather was bad, your crops failed.
Yeah, and to feed the people so they didn't starve and all that.
But if you had too much, then it rotted.
Yeah. And then we also did another one, which was for landing on the moon. And you had to control the
lunar
speed
yep.
of the lunar the module, whether you were going to do the right landing or crash into the moon's surface. We used to have so much fun with that. And that was all text-based. You did not see any graphics like you do nowadays. Yep. Even with the Atari, you know, there was some crude. No, this was
line graphics.
Yeah, this was strictly lines of text. So you had to visualize this, you know, spaceship coming down slowly, and you're trying to adjust it just so it would be just right.
Yep, you had to get your closing velocity and your fuel. You always ran out of fuel too soon, or you hit save too much fuel and hit the ground too fast because you didn't burn it fast enough. And that actually happened on Apollo 11, the first lunar landing. They only had like 2 seconds of fuel, 2 or 3 seconds of fuel left.
Yeah, when they finally checked it's like
because the landing spot, they had overshot their primary landing spot and trying to land in a bunch of boulders. So Neil had to take manual control of the lander to find
get
its
it
way
down. Yeah,
down
get
safely.
It down.
Yep.
And they once they got out and looked, it's like, whoa, we missed that by that much. Because, like you say, if he hadn't taken that over, they would have crashed right into a big mountain of rocks.
Oh, Nick says the Zork engine is available for pretty much all OSs, so you can replay Zork, one of the very early text adventure games, yeah. Zork 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm. I do want to thank, though, all the folks that have been calling in, trying to help me with my issue. Like I say, it's just been a great brain teaser, and for a number of folks, you know, would find it very frustrating. But us, I guess, geeks.
Yeah, it's a puzzle we have to solve.
Find it a challenge. And my wife knows now that when I'm on a mission to get it done, you know, just, you know, I'll sit there. Well, it should only take me a few minutes. And she'll just go, yeah, right. She sees me a couple hours later. Yeah. And I'm so, how are you doing? Oh, it's bugging me.
It should only take me a few more minutes.
she is very gracious. I got to give her credit for that. She'll sit there and say, "Have you had any luck?" No, it shouldn't be this damn hard.
Yep.
You know, because it was working and logically.
And the only thing that changed shouldn't have made a difference. That's what's most annoying.
I mean, because all you're doing is changing services. You know, granted, I had a different router, and the router setting up IP forwarding is no biggie.
Yeah.
And like I say, the address, because here's the thing that gets me.
Maybe it's an IPv6 versus V4 issue.
But here's the thing, though. This Raspberry Pi has two services on it. One, which is what they call All-Star. And I can get on my handheld radio and use it and get out no problem through this Raspberry Pi. But then there's another add-on, like additional program. It's called EchoLink. And like I say, that was working. No, it's not. And the only thing different that changed in the EchoLink, which I went in and did, was the my public address. Like I was telling folks, if you go to my IP, it will then tell you, you know, your IP address. So I went in and I found where I had to change it. I thought that would solve it because there's not much in this program mm-hmm. to set up. Really, nothing yeah. has changed. And the Pi is still working, but it's just one aspect of the people trying to connect to me. It's like they're not getting in through the front door. And I can't see where, you know, because I don't have any blocking or all that. Granted, I've got a firewall up, but I don't know. But that's the fun of it, folks. I'm not complaining. I find this as a challenge, and I love it. I always love to find different things that I can play around with and work with, you know, and try to figure out. That's one part of the computer world, which Nick, Steve, and I have done for years, that yep. we find a challenge. A lot of folks will sit there and say, I'd take a baseball bat to it. Well, you know what? We're not that way. We're wound a little different. And, you know, that's just the way it is. All right, tell you what. As a gentleman would always say here, you've put up with 1 hour. But, hey, don't go anywhere. You know, you can subject yourself to another full hour of sound bites as we click off the last show for this year. This is the last year, and we will be kicking off a brand new show come next week, and Nick will be back. Like I said, he's enjoying a little time off with family and that. You know, it's that time of year. So, you know what? Hey, without any further ado, we will be back in just a few minutes, and we will take your questions. So, you know, hey, go ahead and light up the phones. Matthew is on the phone right now, but give us a call at 966-5299, and we will be back in just a few minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good afternoon. You are listening to the Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we are here. Nick, of course, if you folks have been listening or just tuned in, is taking a well-deserved day off.
One step ahead of the law somewhere yeah. in the Southwest. yeah. Actually in the Southwest. No. Yeah.
No, but we're here to take your computer questions and tell you what, we're going to go right back to the phones. We've got Matthew on here from Webster. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, I got a really important question. I just wonder why, I mean, Greenlight must be impressive to have and stuff. But in Rochester up here, why is Time Warner Cable so exclusive? I mean, I believe they have contracts with some of these apartment places, like my uncle. He used to say that they couldn't install satellites in there and things. And I used to live in Buffalo as well, and why isn't Verizon in Rochester?
There was, 50 years ago? No, 30 years ago? There was an agreement made by cable companies in the early days that because it was so expensive to lay out cable service, that cities would give a cable company exclusive access to that city. And there's so few cable companies left anymore. I think there's five major companies mm-hmm. across the country that almost every city in certain regions is run by the same company. So we've started calling that a duopoly. Is that telephone came from the telephone company because again for the similar reasons it costs so much to put out the wires that the cities gave them an exclusive right to the telephone service. And then, so when internet came along, we had our telephone company giving us DSL internet and the TV company giving us cable internet. And so those two choices are all that's available, usually by contract with the cities. There is technically nothing stopping Verizon from laying their own wire and coming into Rochester if they want to. Generally, it's not worth their cost to do that. So that's one of the things that we're excited about Greenlight doing is they have to lay their own wire in this case a fiber line, everywhere they want to service. And so there's a huge upfront cost to get the wire down. And then even before they can get the wire, they have to get the permits from each jurisdiction. So each town has its own permitting process. And so that's one of the reasons why Greenlight is doing this sign up for to show your intent. You pay them a penny to show your intent to get the service because they have to know they're going to have a certain number of customers to justify the huge expense of laying the fiber in that area.
And here's the thing, too, though, is with Mr. Galisano jumping in there, that has sped up the process.
Right.
Greatly. I mean, we wouldn't be expanding, you know, into as many areas as it is without his funding.
So what has happened is that, you know, 20 years ago, you know, Time Warner signed a contract with Monroe County saying we're going to put cable in there and we want a 20-year contract. And they said, okay, because there's nobody else. And so now what we're seeing is we have to wait for these contracts to expire before another company might come in. But for another company to come in, they have to lay their own wires, and that's just so
expensive. Yeah.
That the inertia of doing it has basically prevented companies from having that type of competition.
Getting the right-of-ways and access.
Can I tap in? Let me say this. With all the money that Frontier had, or not has now, but had back then, why didn't they up to what Verizon's capability is for them today?
Now, they didn't have enough money to cover this. This is huge. And what this venture is taking on, you've got to have some major backers
and there is
fiber. You can't get the speeds out of copper. They've got to scrap that. Frontier knows that. That's why you don't see them even advertising their internet service anymore, because fiber, you know, is the way to go. Copper isn't. It's passé. And well, they have to restring the whole network.
And there is what's called dark fiber. There's a lot of fiber that Frontier laid in downtown Rochester ages ago for businesses to use. And the last time we checked,
is that called the T3 lines?
Well, T3 is still a telephone service. I think that's a 45 megabit telephone service. Uses copper wiring. There are fiber connections that Frontier had. I'm not sure if they still own them or not. But they were never able to spur the business. And one of the things that we ran into in my company is we tried going to Frontier for high-speed fiber, and it was just ridiculously expensive. And so we had to stick with cable service because it was too expensive. You can also get internet service through satellite dish. So HughesNet is one of the big satellite providers. But they are also not as fast as having a wire. And the cable wire services are just so much more capable of faster speeds than telephone wire services. So basically, basic telephone DSL is about 6 megabit per line. So Frontier does advertise they have a 12 megabit service and a 24 megabit service by running multiple phone lines to your house and bonding them all together. We used to do that in the early days of modems.
Let me tap in, too. There's also a possibility with the dongle. You have a cellular dongle that you could do over Wi-Fi.
You can do cellular internet. That's also very, very expensive. Most services charge you by the gig, and just using it as a cell phone for just using internet on your cell phone. We see a lot of services are charging $10-$20 a gig. If you look at your home internet usage, I typically use 500 or 600 gigs a month. Sometimes more than that. Just with basic.
Boy, you're smoking up at those speeds. So you're smoking up there. Whoa.
Yeah. Just sometimes that's just basic downloading. Every OS update that comes out is 4 or 5 gigs. You stream a movie, that's 2 or 3 gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just not something feasible for most people on cellular internet. And as you get into the more outlying areas where the TV signals aren't running, cellular and satellite's too expensive, a lot of people are still stuck with telephone company for internet because that's the only thing they can get run. We've got a lot of customers out in the Victor Honeoye Falls area where their driveway might be half a mile long, and they're told it's going to be $20,000 to run cable TV to their house, and so they decide not to. And we are seeing, what's interesting is we're seeing along the lakes, because we live in so many lake areas now, where people are doing a year-round lake houses instead of just summer lake houses, that the internet services are starting to build out because people are demanding that in the more outlying areas. But you can still go to places.
And also, I've also heard that it adds like the price of $2,000 to real estate if you're fiber connected for, to sell a house.
Yeah, a lot of people are adding as a selling point when they sell their house if they have fiber internet services.
Yep, big selling point. Okay.
Well, that's really cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, listen, I just want to say I'm a ViewSat boy, VS2000, Bell and Dave, Canada Satellite 119.
Okay, well, we'll catch you later. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, so we joke, well, it's not quite a joke. We say that we are in a duopoly between the telephone company and the TV company, but there are other alternatives for internet, and most of them are either slower or more expensive. And so that's why we're real excited about a company doing fiber. But again, it's very, very costly. They have to get easements and right-of-ways and renting pole space. Either the phone company or the electric company owns the telephone pole they want to run the wires on.
Yep.
So that can be expensive, too.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. We got them loading up here. We got Larry from Webster. Go ahead, Larry.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a question. I want to replace my older laptop, an HP, one of the newer laptops. I'm just wondering what minimum requirements I would have for that, like for storage and for RAM, things of that nature.
What are you going to do with it?
Well, I'm just usually no games, just internet, email. That's pretty much it. Once in a while, I might do some kind of a little DVD or something like that, but not much on this
Chromebook.
Well, yeah, that can be a big thing, is if you're just doing casual web surfing, email, things like that. Chromebooks are relatively inexpensive.
$200-$300.
One of the things they do with a Chromebook is that they often don't have much local storage, but they use an SD card slot for additional storage. You typically want to get at least 4 gigs of RAM, because so much is done in RAM now, with multiple tab windows open. If you're looking at a traditional desktop PC with Windows or Mac on it, I would say at least 8 gigabytes minimum. 16 if you can afford it. The more you get now, the longer the device can last before it starts feeling too old. And storage drives are an interesting point these days. A lot of computers, especially laptops, are coming with solid-state storage drives, but they cost more than a spinning mechanical drive.
Yep.
So typically you look at a laptop, you're getting a 128 gig, 256 gig. With a desktop, you're looking at a terabyte or 2 terabyte because the spinning drives are just so much cheaper than the SSD drives. So some companies will have, Apple calls theirs a Fusion drive. Other companies do this, do similar things, where it's part SSD for speed and part spinning drive for capacity.
One other thing, though, going back to the Chromebook just for a moment. One, Chromebook, you can store everything up on the cloud. So if you're taking pictures or doing anything, all the things that you say run on your phone as far as apps and all that can now be run on a Chromebook. The other advantage with a Chromebook is you don't pay for an operating system. It doesn't get viruses, spyware, or malware.
So a lot of times the cost of ownership is so much lower because you're not always fighting to clean off whatever the latest infection
was.
Yeah,
and you don't have to worry about, oh, updating it, crash my machine and does this and does that. You're not paying for an operating system.
I see. One other question. Is there much difference between an i3 or an i5 processor?
They're faster. So
yeah.
And then there's the i7 and the i9, which are even faster.
Do you really need it?
Well, some of it we like to say it's a 2-cylinder car engine or 4-cylinder, 6-cylinder, 8-cylinder, depending on what you're doing with it. If you're just reading email, an i3 is probably fine.
Or surfing
the web. Now, the trick with surfing the web is that so much of the web now is videos and animation that it's not a text page anymore, that quite often even web pages need more power to load that web page. So the i3s are cheaper, the i5s are faster. It's always that trade-off between speed versus price.
Yep.
That was a good point about that. I see a lot of the new laptops advertised as the i5 processors, so it might be, I didn't think of that part of it, but the streaming and everything and the videos are now quite a bit almost really, I guess.
And the other thing we're seeing a lot in computers is we've sort of reached a barrier. About 4 gigahertz is about as fast as computers can run for various quantum reasons. And so companies are putting more cores in. So you can get a dual core processor, quad core, hexa core. The more cores it has, the better at parallel tasking. So if you have a web window open and, say an email window open, they can both get a whole core of the processor to do their work in. And so that can be one way to make a computer faster by putting in more cores versus higher speeds.
Do you think that the desktop is kind of the way of the past? Most of these advertisements for these computer stores are all laptops.
Yeah, in the last few years, laptops have been usually outselling desktops about 75% to 25%. But then when you look at phones and tablets, the whole PC industry is just a tiny fraction of the phone and tablet industry because those devices are getting so much more powerful. We generally see, though, that desktop computers are often more powerful than a laptop, but people just like the versatility and convenience of carrying a laptop around. And you can plug into a bigger monitor. You can plug into, you know, more storage space when you get back to your desk with a laptop. We have a lot of our customers will buy a laptop that they say is just going to sit on their desk all the time, but they like the idea of that. But it's hard sometimes to justify spending $500 or $600 on a laptop with a 13-inch screen when you can get a desktop with, say, a 20-inch screen for maybe not much more than that. So if you're going to be viewing or editing photos, a lot of times it's nice to have that bigger screen, but you can plug your laptop into a bigger screen if you want to.
The desktops probably last a little bit longer. They don't break down as often as the laptops, maybe.
No, not necessarily.
There's something to be said about that, though, because if you carry your laptop around, the jostling, the potential for falling and breaking is higher. But
if it's going to stay in the house, then no.
Desktops are often physically bigger. Well, usually physically bigger, so there's more airflow.
Bigger screens.
So they can often stay cooler. Because heat is always an enemy of computers, but then there's more dust that gets sucked into desktop computers. We're also seeing a new class. Apple has their iMac series, and then other companies are doing the same thing, where it's an all-in-one. The computer and the screen are just one box. you don't have the tower on the floor like a traditional desktop computer. And those are getting very popular because they are easier to move around the house because it's just one box. And then you can get the bigger screen with the desktop behind it. Oftentimes, it's a laptop-sized motherboard just sticking behind the screen. So it's a laptop with a giant screen and no battery.
The fans they have in these laptops now are a lot better and better than they were in the past because of more capability, I guess, they have to have or something.
Basically, yeah. As technology is progressing, everything's getting bigger, better, faster.
Well, thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
Okay, have a good one.
Yeah, a lot of people are finding that Chromebooks are good as a second machine or third machine. I'm not too sure I would recommend a Chromebook as your primary machine. Unless you are just, you know, running typical web and mail and things like that. Even financial stuff, you want to keep your books. There are online versions of financial management programs that can do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of us have our desktop machines that's our main powerhouse, and then maybe a tablet or Chromebook that we carry around with us. And quite frequently, that's cheaper than buying a powerful laptop.
Yep. All right, tell you what, let's try to get Andy in from Greece before our break. Go ahead, Andy.
Hi, guys. Real quick, I do have a question, but on your Orbi thing issue, were you able to hook the Orbi up and test it through Spectrum before you got green light?
No.
No, you said the Orbi worked before you switched to green light?
No, I didn't.
The Raspberry Pi worked with your previous router, yeah.
Right. I had a Spectrum router.
So, oh, okay.
So I can't go a router to a router.
Oh, all right. I was hoping you'd, because if you'd been able to hook the Orbi up and have it work through the Spectrum, then it doesn't work to green light. It kind of exonerates the Orbi. But if you didn't, you're still left where you were. Okay,
yep.
Never mind. Greenlight does have a list of modems that they quote-unquote recommend. They don't recommend any Linksys unit, and the Orbi's not on the list either. But I don't know when the last time they updated that was.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, like I say, Nick has been using it, and it's just a glitch. I got to go. It's
some weird setting somewhere you haven't
found. Yeah, just something, yep. You know, it's something. It's not a major blocker for me, you know, it's not disrupting.
It becomes a point of pride that you can't fix.
Yeah, you know, I mean, one half of the aspect of this Raspberry Pi, it's up and working fine. For some of these folks would know what I'm talking about. On the All-Star Link, I'm up, I'm running, no problem. On the same Raspberry Pi that's running the All-Star, there's a side program, sort of an attachment called Echo Link. And Echo Link is the part that's broken but was working before. So it's just this glitch. I'm trying to figure it out, and I take it on as a personal challenge. It's the fun of it.
To my issue quickly, if we can get this in before break.
Yep.
Bluetooth. I've got the car is set up to do hands-free through the Bluetooth on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly this past week, I'll be driving down the road, and I get this little chime that says, Bluetooth device has been disconnected. And about 10 seconds later, chimes come out again, Bluetooth's been reconnected. And it goes back and forth, on and off, on and off, on and off. I've unpaired and removed from both the car and the phone a couple times. I've tried, you know, I make sure there's no trace in it. I turn everything off, come back to it an hour later just to make sure there's nothing in memory anywhere. Reprogramming in, it seems to connect. I get all the codes I'm supposed to. It looks like it's in decent shape. I'll start diving down the road, and sure enough, it does it again.
Could be the radio. I mean, I've got a Ford Escape, and I've got a problem with the radio that I can, you know, be listening to the radio. And I drive along, and I come somewhere, and I stop. You know, I just, you know, turn the car off, go in, come back out, and most of the time, the radio will come back on. But there's a number of times I can go in, turn the car off, come back in, and the radio doesn't start up. I have to hit the off button and turn it back on. So, and, you know, they're aware of the issue, but it could be just an issue with the radio. Maybe they need to do a firmware update on your radio in the car.
The Bluetooth radio. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Check there.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
It's becoming weird when you need to update the software in your car.
Yeah, I mean, it is becoming an issue, like I say. And they go, yeah, we're aware of it. Matter of fact, when I went into the dealership to talk to them about it, they, oh, yeah, we're aware of it. So,
the other thing to think of, is, as Nick points out in the chat room, is if it happens in the same area, it could be outside electromagnetic interference. Maybe someone has a giant ham tower, and every time you drive by their radio, their ham radio, it disconnects your radio, because Bluetooth is also 2.4 gigahertz. That's part of the problem of the 2.4 gigahertz spectrum. It's been called the junk band because so many devices use it. It's very, very crowded, and that's one reason why a lot of Wi-Fi routers have the 5 gigahertz band in it now, too. But 5 gigahertz doesn't go through walls as well,
yeah.
But it's less crowded. So you can pick which problem you want to have.
Yeah, you pick your poison, and that's the whole thing. Like I said, more and more, it's becoming more and more of an issue for folks because, whether they want to believe it or not, they're becoming so tethered. You know, you hear us say tether it to this or that. You're becoming very tethered to your phone, that you can't go anywhere without it. You ask most folks, and this, I remember as a kid, when we were memorizing phone numbers, you could ask me, say, one of my aunt's or uncle's phone number, and I could rattle it off, or a friend's phone number. Nowadays, you ask somebody, well, what's their phone number? I got to look it up on my phone. Everybody has become so reliable.
I don't even know my own phone number.
That if you try to have them call somebody, I don't know, it's in my phone. I don't know the number. They're lost. You know, and I think everybody's guilty of that right now. You know, it's just the way it is. We've become, like I said, if you go drive around, and if you're driving the streets and you go by bus stops or anything else, or in the mall, you see everybody with their face in the phone, looking down. We have become so attached to them that it's unbelievable. All right, tell you what. That music tells me right now we got to take a short break. But you know what? We still got another half hour of this phone to go. So Doug is on the phone. We're going to get to him when we come back. But you know what? Pick up the phones. Give us a call. 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And you can get on the longest running computer show in the known world. Yep, that's right. Sound Bites. Right here on Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known world that someone would very famously...
Don't limit it to the known world. It's in the known universe. And I'm wearing my Lego Bill Nye and Lego Neil Tyson t-shirt.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah. They're holding a telescope. Neil has a copy of Principia Mathematica, and Bill has a water molecule.
Okay. All right, tell you what. Let's get back to the phones right away. We got some folks hanging on the line. Here's Doug and Aranica. Go ahead, Doug.
Hi, Dave. Over the years, I've bought dozens and dozens of CDs from Amazon. And, of course, now the new vehicles that you buy don't have CD players. So I'm starting to buy more digital files. Mm-hmm. And I can't burn a CD at all with a Windows Media Player. They're either zipped or compressed. And I don't know how to do that. And I'm also thinking about putting those files on a flash drive, and I don't know how to do that.
What was it called? Nero was a program that you could that would do all that. Nero was great for burning CDs, copying CDs, creating CDs for your car that if you want to put it into your car or other device.
One of the tricks is you have to tell it it's a music CD, not a data CD.
Yeah.
So that could be what's happening with Windows Media Player. It's making a data CD from the zip
Windows
file.
Is very dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate to say it, but it is. And it just assumes, you know, it looks at some files and just thinks, oh, it can handle this and that. And like, say, DOCX or that type of stuff or other formats, it can't open them. And it's like, what? You know, it trips over its own self. That's why you might want to look at a product like Nero. I don't know if that's...
Okay, yeah, because I've tried, like...
Yeah, again,
free software where you can unzip them or uncompress them or whatever.
What is that? Because WinZip now, they want to charge for that. There's a freebie. I think it's called 1-Up. And it's an unzipping program to unzip stuff for free. Because, you know, WinZip, excuse me, for the longest time, or just zip files, was always free for the longest time. You could zip and unzip files. And that was a utility that everybody had for decades, and they used it, and it was free. Then all of a sudden they, like anything else, to keep it going, they had to start charging for it. But there are some other third parties that you can use that do the same thing. They'll unzip it.
And then you also have to remember to finalize the CD. Most CD programs will leave the CD open so you can add stuff to it later, but then it only works on that one computer you start the burn on. You have to finalize it so it works afterwards.
7-Zip is what
7-Zip's another one, yep. If you're buying your music CDs from Amazon, you almost always get digital versions included with that. If you go into your Amazon Music Library at music.amazon.com, you can find the digital versions already there and just download them already digitally.
Exactly. Yeah, so somebody else. I'm sorry.
Come to realize though that they, when I open up the Windows Media Player, if I've downloaded the music on my computer, that it says it can't recognize or can't open the file.
What's the file type?
I would guess MP3, but honestly, I don't know.
Well, it can't be an MP3 because Windows Media Player can read those.
Somebody else was recommending extra audio copy.
As a way to copy music CDs, yeah.
Exact audio copy.
So that will let you copy an existing disc, probably.
Yep.
Okay, I will write that down. I'll see what I can do. It's disappointing because, I mean, you spend a lot of money on a 2019 vehicle and it doesn't come with a CD player and they just look at you, like you're from Mars.
You're supposed to sync your phone over Bluetooth and play everything from your phone. My wife has the same problem with her car.
Or some folks will go ahead and they make USB CD drives.
There might be a flash drive port. So your idea about putting the MP3s on a flash drive might work too.
Yeah.
Okay, and what software would I use for that?
Just the desktop.
Yeah.
Drag the MP3 file onto the flash drive.
Okay.
Give it a shot. Let us know.
Sure. This is the last Saturday of the decade.
Mm-hmm.
No, decades start with one. This is the tenth. This is the ninth. Yeah. The ninth year of the decade. Next year is the 10th year of the decade.
It's the last show for our decade.
For the 2019.
Because we start year 31 in September. We've already started.
Yeah,
we've already completed 30. We're in our starting our fourth decade.
Yep. Nick in the chat room is saying that Amazon Music downloads are FLAC. That may be because he's on Chrome. I thought mine were on MP3 when I looked at him. So it may be the download is a FLAC download and you needed a different player for Windows.
Okay.
Let me log into my Amazon account and take a look here.
FLAC.
Yeah, FLAC is a free lossless audio compressor. It's a lossless compression, where MP3 is a lossy compression. It throws away stuff it doesn't think you'll miss, and audio purists don't like that. And so quite often they like the FLAC format because it is uncompressed. It's compressed, but lossless.
Okay.
Okay. Okay,
sure. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate
it. Have a good one, my friend.
VLC is an option you can use as a player. That should play just about any audio or video format. So that's one thing to try as well. The wonderful thing about standards is there's so many of them to choose from. And if you don't have the player for the thing you just downloaded, then you'll often need to find another player, which can be tricky. And as Dave is frantically pushing buttons to get a new caller online.
All right, we got Ed from Rochester. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, guys. I just want to give you a little feedback. Last week, you were nice enough to point me in the direction of a Roku stick to try to get some football games to watch them on the big screen.
Yeah.
And I got one, and this is weird. It worked good for 2 days, and I didn't do any, no games. I didn't watch any movies, blah, blah, blah. I just kind of played around with it a little bit. Third day, I turned it on, and it says 0 megabytes per second. I was, how can this be? So I called them up, and they said, well, you're out of data. So they said, call your carrier. So I called TracFone and finally got somebody from corporate who could, speak and understand English. And I said, look, I'm paying every month unlimited data. I don't understand why doesn't this Roku stick work? Well, he said, if you'll take a look in the fine print, mm-hmm. that's quote unquote, he said, they'll take the stream that I get and they'll allocate only 10 gigabytes to a third party product like that. He said, after you use your 10 gig, he said, it's done until you refresh everything next month or every the 50, whatever. You'd have to wait for 2 weeks. So they say, I said, wait, I don't understand. I said, number one, I've got unlimited data. He mm-hmm. asked, yes. He said, doesn't affect your phone. He said, just a third party.
Yeah, like unlimited on the like phone. Roku. Yeah.
Then he said that the thing that threw me out, that confused me, I want to talk to you guys. How in the world could I use 10 gigabytes in 2 days, not barely using other than, nothing on the phone was like a high definition movie or anything like that. Any suggestions? I'd be more happy to listen.
It may have been an OS upgrade
yeah.
that the Roku downloaded. A lot of times when you first buy them, they've been in the box for weeks or months.
Yeah, they could have been months,
or
longer.
And that can often eat up a lot of the data initially. It goes back to what we were talking about. Using cellular for streaming data can often be expensive. And a lot of plans, the unlimited data has these fine prints. So it's unlimited for the phone, but not for external hotspot data. And sometimes it's unlimited quantity, but after a certain number of gigs, they'll slow you down drastically. Mm-hmm. It's not unlimited
That's right.
speed.
And I said, look, I don't have the old, I used to have the old $45 a month, and it would tell you that right up front.
Yep.
If you go over 10 gigs, then you're going to get the dial-up speed or something like that. So, but I didn't know how I could burn 10 gigs in like 2 days. That's just
Yeah,
weird.
Like I say, just doing the Roku update and then some of the other, looking around in that for the time that you were doing it could very easily eat it up. You don't realize how fast you can go through data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to take this back to the guy that I got some Best Buy. It's a good deal. It's like $25. It's on sale. But the thing that also irritates you a little bit about this is they're advertising the implications on the front of the box. Stream free TV, blah, blah, blah. And they have one thing like Netflix, Hulu, ESPN. So when you go into it, surprise, if you want it, you got to pay for it.
Well, it depends on your service provider.
See, yeah, it all assumes that you've got decent internet.
Yeah, because like I say, it's true, and what they said, they're not lying. That you can do all that stuff, and it will do it fast. But again, it depends because they're selling this all over the U.S. It depends on the service provider and what they have in their fine print.
Mm-hmm.
In your case, they're throwing it to a third party. And reading, and that's the way they get around it. Whereas other services, say like Verizon or something like that, and or Spectrum, you can do stream and no problem.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, because I wanted to ask ESPN. They give the ESPN 2 free, for example, but that's like lacrosse at the junior high school level or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and they have, or for example, they have on their channel, they'll have something like This Old House. I said, well, that's, you know, kind of, or Ask This Old House. I said, that'd be interesting. I swear to you, those guys look like they're 20 years younger. So it's there, but it's old stuff, you know, but.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, it was a good. Yeah, I learned something about it, and you guys told me about it, so I appreciate it. So I'm glad I saved my receipt.
Great. Yep.
You guys take care. Thanks for your help.
All right. Thank you.
I also read, especially for the Buffalo Bills games, the Yahoo Sports app allows you to freely stream the Bills games. But again, depending on your data service. So if you've got data limits, it may not work. We were doing that at the flying field over the last few months. People who wanted to watch the Bills games but still go flying. Someone brought a pocket TV, but the battery didn't last through the whole game. So we're trying to figure out a way to charge it while we're there.
Well, you got to get somebody's got to come with a solar panel.
Yeah, we have a solar setup, but we've got banana clips for the airplane batteries, and so we had to figure out a way to convert that.
You got to do different clip-on pigtails.
Well, I have a USB port on my airplane charger, so I can plug my phone in to keep it charged. So that's what I did for the guys when I was there watching the Bills games.
Yeah, let's see. Through Sling, I get it through the, they call it the NFL Network, which is part of my package.
Which is an additional package,
and so my wife is a big Bills fan and was watching it there because she thought, oh, wait, it's not on the regular channels. So she just happened to go over to Sling and went over and saw the NFL Network. Oh, and all of a sudden I hear her yelling, you know, I'm over in the ham room. She goes, hey, guess what? I can watch my football game. Okay. She goes, no, the Bills are on. They're playing New England. Maybe I don't want to watch it.
Yeah.
They did do a good game. I mean, it was a very tight game in that. It wasn't, they didn't lose as bad as some folks were predicting. But hey, they're still in it.
Yep.
So I'm just waiting to see how my Kansas City Chiefs do, though. They usually always choke for so many years. I mean, they won. What was it, the first or second Super Bowl? And that's one thing I used to always have over my brother-in-law, because he's, you know, he's a big Bills fan. And he goes, oh, yeah, but we're going to the Super Bowl. And I go, yeah, wait a minute. Let me ask you. And he goes, as opposed to your Bills. I go, yeah, wait a minute. How many Super Bowls have the Bills won? Mm-hmm. None. I go, guess what? My Chiefs won one.
So how many have they been in? That's a different question.
Yeah, that's true. No, I got to give them credit. Yeah, they've been there four times? I don't know. I'm not.
There was that one stretch of time where they were in like every year for four years.
Yeah, it was a 4-year stretch. They went there and went to the ball and didn't come home with the first prize.
Yep.
Unfortunately. But going back to, you know, that gentleman, though, as far as burning software and that type of stuff, there are a lot of programs, you know, like he was saying, though, a lot of the laptops and that type of stuff now, which we were talking about before, you're seeing more and more laptops out there and tablets and all that other stuff. Yeah, laptops, to get them thinner, even though I don't know why they're getting them thinner, lighter, but then they're also taken away from the battery life, which I think is totally stupid. But that's a whole other thing. And it's just like the phone companies, you know, the phone manufacturers. Here's a hint, folks. If you're listening, any company out there that's manufacturing other phones, make a bigger battery in it. These folks keep trying to make them smaller and thinner. Oh, it's a few millimeters thinner. Well, it doesn't make difference. Most folks put cases on them or put them in these other devices to protect them. A few more millimeters thicker and give me more battery life, I'll take it. I don't have to have that couple of millimeters thinner. It doesn't matter in my back pocket. Because like I say, I put protective case over mine, and I worry about that more than anything else. But the biggest issue, I guarantee you, for most folks using their phones and as much as they do nowadays, is the battery life. If they can focus on anything, focus on more battery life.
Longer battery.
That would be such a big selling point. You know, if they could come out this coming year and say, tell you what, our battery life kicks butt over every other person. And don't try to, you know, fudge the, you know, the statistics. It's like they say, you know, well, they're not, you know.
All day battery life.
Yeah.
As long as your day is only 4 hours.
Or you're just sitting there looking at it, not really doing much, not surfing or downloading a movie or anything else like that. You know, put it in, you know, an average day, person's use of, say, surfing the internet. Because nowadays you go into the internet and say, whether it's Facebook or whatever, the minute you get in there, all of a sudden it's playing other videos.
Yep.
And it annoys the heck out of me. That's why I don't do much on Facebook. Because, you know, you can't go anywhere without it, you know, screaming out all these other different ads and everything else and all that other stuff. So battery life is a critical one. Yep. And I think if they could do that, they would really, really have something that, you know, would be a big seller.
Yeah. And I just downloaded an album from my Amazon Music that I had purchased on physical disc.
Mm-hmm.
And it came as a zip file. And in the zip file were MP3s. So that's probably where the previous caller was running into problems. You have to unzip the file first. Then then the MP3s can be burned to a CD.
Yep. 7-zip.
Yep.
Yeah. Just do it that way. And like I say, not that I'm cheap and I don't support, you know, various, you know, programs and that type of stuff. But I mean, for so long, and I did support the original shareware program of zip and unzip. And it used to be great. Because I can remember you had to put it in a separate folder and you'd run zip. And zip would then pack these things all up into a nice little package. Then you could email it to somebody.
Right, instead of needing to download 10 files and hoping they all came in right.
Or then if they sent you a file, you would then just go into the utility of unzip. You'd select the folder, tell it unzip, and you'd tell it where to go. I mean, I supported that. But now, you know, it's just a simple thing. These other bells and whistles that some of this stuff does, it's like, yeah, I don't need that. And that's why, yeah, no, I'm not going to be part of that. I'm not paying for that. I'll pay for shareware. I love supporting people that do shareware. I wrote shareware back in the day, and I appreciated the folks that used to, you know, send their support. But, you know, some of these other bigger corporations, they just like Windows, they add on so much stuff that they're really not doing anything new.
Yep. You're trying to find a new feature you need to convince you to buy the next version.
Well, it's just like, Windows word processor, Word. I mean, you got all these other features. Hello, Google Docs is free, and it does everything Word does for what I'm doing. I mean, these other features, 95% of the folks probably don't even use, I would think. You know, some of the, because they can, Docs has so many features in it, you know, as far as titles and moving stuff around and everything else. I don't know. I guess I'm just rattling off, but folks should definitely, you know, give that a look because Google Docs, one, it saves it up to a cloud. There's just not the Docs. You can do spreadsheets, PowerPoint. I mean, if you've not looked at the Google line of products, do yourself a favor this year and give it a look because there are a lot of cool things in there that you can do that you might be missing out instead of shelling out the, you know, whatever it is now for, what is it, Office 365?
Yeah. Yeah, it's $100 a year or a flat $150.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if you want to save that money for something that will cost you something called, free, you know, go for it. Give it a shot. Make that one of your maybe things to do for the upcoming 2020. All right, tell you what, folks. That means those tones are the end of this show for this year. But you know what? Hey, don't worry. We will be back again next week.
Next year.
Next week. Next year. You know, to start off a whole new year of sound bites, the longest running computer show known in the universe, as Mr. Nick would say. And he will be back next week. I can guarantee that. We won't let him have 2 weeks off in a row. Can't have that. But you know what? I want to thank everybody that took the time to call in and weigh in on the issue that I was trying to get resolved. I really appreciate all your help and all the folks that also texted us. But you know what? Hey, we'll do this again next week in 166 hours. So you know what? Hey, stay tuned. We got some German music coming up right here on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.